Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Hello, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are so excited to have an all-new episode of Snacky Tunes for you today. We are actually going all the way to Europe for both of our guests. And first up, we have our dear friend, past guest, Marianne Farber-Lavin, co-founder of Soleil Wine. You may remember her from when she was on a decade ago, talking about Sud de France, and we chat with her about growing up in the Mediterranean Sea, cooking with her grandma, her new wine company, and how the company is helping turn beaches cleaner and the world a little bit more delicious. And then we are going to Greece to talk with California artist Sonny and the Sunsets about his new album, Self-Awareness Through Macrame. We talk about growing up in Bolinas, California, the undercurrent of California itself, and turning ideas in the ether into art and new music. It's a great episode. We're excited that you're here with us on a Sunday or whenever you're tuning in to Snacky Tunes here on Heritage Radio Network. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy. welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I was digging into the archives and realized we had you on for the first time 10 years ago when we were babies. So welcome back.
Thank you, Darren. I'm so honored and so pleased to be invited to Snacky Tune. I love Snacky Tunes again to talk about play.
Yes, and we love having you here. Now, I know you're coming from Paris, but I want to go back to where you grew up, which is a region of southern France along the Mediterranean, which sounds dreamy and idyllic and just... For as long as you want, tell me about the food and what you ate and drank growing up, because just take me there right now on an overcast gray day in LA.
Oh, yes. It will be my pleasure. Indeed, as you said, I grew up in southern France, in the Languedoc, around Montpellier and Narbonne, for the people who are in the know. Mm-hmm. And it's a region with such diverse and striking natural beauty. You have salt flats, you have marshlands in the Camargue, you have sandy beaches on the coastline, on the Mediterranean, and food and wine, not as a kid, but was at the center of everything social in my childhood. So I guess that I was first initiated from an early age by my parents, especially my grandmother, who was a fantastic cook. She would take me every Sunday to Les Halles. It's a covered market. It's one of the most beautiful markets in southern France. And we'd go and meet with all the shop owners, and we would buy all sorts of meat and vegetable and fresh seafood. And that was a dream. Then we would go back to her place and spend hours together in the kitchen. So she was giving me small jobs, but they were incredible, like cutting the size of the French green beans and other very interesting tasks. Her specialty, the dishes that she preferred to cook, I mean, there were numerous, but I can give you, the top three. She was mastering the art of cooking cassoulet. That was so good. She was also often cooking quails with ham, and she would put juniper berries in it. Those were absolutely delicious. And she also loved cooking lentils with sausages. It's a very local dish too. You have several sorts of meat in that dish. So all of this doesn't sound very many.
No. It sounds amazing. And I get it.
Yes.
I mean, it sounds like the time and the slowness of the dish and what it takes to prepare and cook aligns with like a slower pace of life in the Mediterranean.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, there were always fresh vegetables and fruit on the table. That's a given because orchards and veggie gardens in southern France are abundant. And depending on the season, you can have amazing produce. So I'm actually going back to Narbonne this week, and I was there last week, and I had fantastic ripe figs. Absolutely wonderful. And of course, in two colors, the green and they're violet, but I guess like black figs.
Yeah. Oh,
you call them very, very sweet, very aromatic. I love this season
too. Now, I know in addition to food being a part of your growing up, that your family has also had a vineyard since the 19th century. And obviously not as a baby, but you definitely grew into the lifestyle of vintners and winemakers and things like that. What was it like to have that running through your blood? And did you realize that was something unique, or did everyone just have a vineyard when you were growing up?
It is not uncommon in southern France to have a family who has a vineyard, especially in the Languedoc, because it's the largest wine-producing region in the world. Also the leader in, side note, also a leader in organic wine production. Yes, indeed, my grandparents and their parents before them had vineyards in a village called Sijan. It's beautiful. It's by the Mediterranean. My grandfather was a doctor, so he was not the one cultivating the vineyard, but he had help and he loved doing it. He was he loved the chemistry of winemaking and he especially loved to make his own fortified wine with Grenache grapes. Also, my mother is a pharmacist, and she wrote her thesis in oenology, a topic she truly understood. And yes, I was born into the world of wine, and I was, you know, surrounded with like objects, like, you know, like wine vats and tools that you use for winemaking, always. But it's only later in life that I decided to work in the wine industry. I wanted to, finally, go back to my roots and wanted to put my knowledge and skills to good use in the communication field, promoting wine beginning, wine regions, as you know.
Yes.
Back in the day with the Sud de France office in New York, pressure of my my region.
I mean, you and your co-founder Thomas actually grew up together, and you've definitely become these these ambassadors to France and this Mediterranean lifestyle. Like, why do you two love shining a spotlight on this region beyond just being from there? Like, what do you think it could teach the rest of the world about how to live and its approach to life?
What I love about this region is that it is very laid back. It's very beautiful. You have a lot of pristine landscape everywhere you go. Very diverse too. As I was saying a little bit earlier, and it's away from the crowds. Also, you can be away from the crowds because often when tourists visit France, they go to the French Riviera or Paris, naturally Normandy and other places. They don't necessarily think of the Languedoc. It's a destination for people who are in the know. It really deserves a visit. It's truly, truly magnificent, and you have a lot of historical sites too. It's not only nature, amazing cuisine, and also on average it's way less expensive than the French Riviera would be. So it's the same for the wine, and they're, you know, like of equivalent quality anyway. So you're sold?
I'm sold. I mean, listen, you don't have to twist my arm to go anywhere in France. Given that you know so much about France and you know Thomas as well, you could have really picked any region. Obviously, it's a great story the way it's coming from the region that you're from, of where you're getting your grapes and the juice and everything like that. But when you start thinking about making your own wine, how much of it were you tapping into the family tradition? How much did you want to have your own innovation? You know, what was the most important things when you two started talking about creating Soleil?
So I love the wines from southern France. I love the grape varieties from southern France. So when we decided to embark on this project, also with my husband, who's our third partner, Nicolas, we wanted to create wines that were typical from that region, but without having the constraints imposed by appellations. It's great. I think, you know, it really has a, you know, like there, it is important to preserve traditions, but we wanted to be very creative with the blends. We wanted to use Mediterranean grapes, but we wanted to have our own recipe. So you can tell that they're from there, but they're our recipe. So it's sold as a vin de France. We knew we wanted to include a large proportion of Picpoul. Picpoul is one of my favorite varieties, and a match made in heaven with oysters and also shellfish. You have a lot of oyster parks in southern France. So that's for Le Blanc, our white. It also has Terre Blanc, which is a cousin of the Picpoul, and a little bit of Uni Blanc. You tasted it.
It's delicious. No, it's great.
Thank you. And it's very popular. It's very popular in the UK, Picpoul. So the appellation is always like sold out of this wines. I think it's having a moment, like people are really like seeking wines made with Picpoul because it's so fresh. There's this salinity that is fantastic. And that you find in, you know, not so many wines. So then, of course, we're from southern France. We've been drinking rosé for decades. and we wanted to make the rosé we wanted to have at home. We wanted to produce our favorite rosé. And so this one is mostly Grenache Noir because we believe that it is one of the best grapes to use for rosé wine. It's juicy and we love its ripe red fruit flavors. It has a good acidity. It's refreshing and we sold out, by the way. So that's for Le Rosé. And for Le Rouge, we wanted something fresh and versatile that you could slightly chill and either serve on its own, because it has very supple tannins, a good acidity, fruit flavors, or that you can have with a meal. Because our idea was to create a wine we would have fun with that we could drink on its own at aperitif time, for example. My favorite time of the day.
Mine too. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about Aperol and aperitif time and a little bit of the music that would pair well with this wine. But first, we're going to have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are with our good friend, Marianne Farber-Lanvin, co-founder of Soleil Wine. And, you know, what I love about your wine and the story behind it is your obvious passion for it. And like the story it's telling is your story and Thomas's story. But story alone is not enough to launch a business. And I'd love to hear a little bit about how you took the idea of having your own wine company and turning it into reality and what those steps look like.
So it all started with Thomas. He works in wine as a worker, and he was tired of like selling other people's wine.
Sure.
He wanted to create his own. I also had this idea in the back of my mind, and one day he called me to ask me for advice, and it all started there on the phone. talking about, creating a new wine, a new wine brand. And it was a friend's project. It's a project that we wanted to have fun with. From the design to the blend to everything. It became a little bit more important than we thought it would be. As a project, because it was quite successful from the beginning, and voila, so we made it work. But we learned so many things. it was really a crash course,
Give me one of the tougher lessons.
One of the tougher lessons: be patient when dealing with administration. Especially when you make organic wines, you have to go through long processes to obtain the certifications, and there are several steps, and everything takes a lot of time. So you have to plan ahead, make sure that you take into account all the delays that you may incur because of the administration, and again, there should be a lot of, control over this, because not everyone can say, oh, we're making organic wine if it's not. But that was a little bit challenging. But, it's been a lot of fun. One thing we did not anticipate, though, was the shortage of paper and glass caused by the pandemic, because... In 2001, and that delayed the production of label boxes, bottles. Transportation was also affected. It delayed things on the administrative side also, and that was probably the most challenging part. And voila. And I had some knowledge of wine importation and exportation procedures, and Thomas has a background in sales and distribution, but we had to start from the ground up.
Sure.
I learned the importance of patience during the pandemic, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the design, and I don't want to be gauche, but like so many new wine brands, or the way people discover wine brands, like does hang their hat on the design. Like they go to a store, they have no idea what they're looking for, and they see a really great looking bottle. And you sort of, I don't want to say tapped into one of the best design firms we know, our friend Anna Polonsky's firm, Polonsky and Friends, which it's not a cheat because she's obviously, that's how you and I met, and she's one of the best, but definitely helps quiet some of the competition when you're looking at all the bottles on a shelf. But why did you go? Well, I mean, I know why you went to Anna, but maybe tell people who are listening why you went to her, and not just why you went to her, but what the design process was. Like, what did you want to capture in the design of it? What did you want to telegraph to people who are just seeing, knowing nothing about the wine on a shelf in a store, let's say in America or the UK?
Yes, I mean, this is easy. To begin with, she's the best. So there's no question that we were going to work with her. But also, she's one of my best friends, and it's a friends project. I mean, everybody is a friend in the project. So I'm doing a little digression, but our importer in the U.S., Robert Bradshaw, Kate Classic, is a friend. Mm. We have a lot of other friends involved in the we'll talk about the charity later, but Carolina Sevigny, yeah, from the 5 Minute Foundation is a friend also. So it's a friends thing, but yes, she's the best. So Amy immediately thought of her food and beverage focus design agency for the labels. The agency is called Polanski & Friends, as you know.
As I know, and I'm a fan, yes.
And we were all super excited to work together on this because, again, it's a passion project. So so we were drawn to images of the early 20th century, the Eau de Cologne labels from the 60s and 70s. With a French Mediterranean vibe found in iconic films and fashion editorials from those decades. Why, like the 70s? Well, it's a nod to the fact that we were Thomas, Nicolas, and I were born in the 70s. This is our decade.
Let's go.
Exactly. So with Anna and Claire Dufournier, we had a mood board in place. So the graphic designer who's Claire on the project painted sun and seaside illustrations with watercolor. Mm. Soleil means sun in ancient French. We played off this concept showing the sun in different settings. And Anna was like really like brilliant, you know, like seeing it, seeing the big picture on this. And we really wanted to create our own contemporary version of this vintage inspired designs. So, I mean, I definitely invite everybody to visit our website or our Instagram account, soleilwines.com, to take a look. And
it's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, you know, I brought to a couple of parties this summer and it just fit right in.
They're great
props for the table. You're drawn to it. It's light. It's refreshing. And you know, the design and what you mentioned about the ocean also ties into your messaging, because I feel that wine brands that launch today, not just wine brands, but a lot of other CPG brands that launch, no longer just about the product themselves. It's always tied to a larger message. Or the ones that I found, we just had Cafecita on the other week, which is about a women grown coffee roaster, and they work with different roasters and female farmers who grow coffee beans all over the world. So it's like great to see that type of messaging permeate through these products that were just for a while, just like, they're just a product. And Soleil is in that camp as well. And I know that the environment is a huge part of what you do. And a lot of people think that, well, with wine, the terroir, it's like, you know, so working within the world of good environmentalism. That's not always the case with wine. So what did you want to say with your wine? What is the message that you're promoting? And how does it go beyond just, you know, standing for something? And I know you mentioned 5 Minute Foundation as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a long conversation, but maybe I'll start with a few words about the name. As I was saying, Soleil means sun in ancient French. But it's also the name of a lounge, a music lounge on the main road. It's also the name of a music lounge on the main road to the beach in Montpellier, along Route des Plages, this is what it's called, where Thomas and I often hanged out with our friends. And I really like that in the word Soleil, there is soul, which nods to the brand's philosophy of doing good, producing organic wines and helping to create awareness around the coast that resonates with us, like ocean preservation. We grew up, you know, like near the Mediterranean. Thomas is a kite surfer. I spend a lot of time at the beach. I like sailing. So it totally made sense. It's really in our culture. And Vin de Bonté is a clin d'œil or reference to an ancient saying in the wine world when it means that when a grape reaches its ideal maturity, it's in plénitude de bonté. So of course, we also want to say that the wine is good. So it's, bonté means goodness, but goodness refers to the fact also that our company uses a percentage of its profits to assist organizations like the 5 Minute Foundation by sponsoring it, but also by like working with our crew and our friend on the beach with this organization that implement beach cleanups. Done it with 5 Minute Foundation. It's our main partner, but we did it in New York with Jamaica Bay Park Conservancy, GBRPC, in the Rockaways in June. We did it with reef conservation in Mauritius in April. We have another one, another beach cleanup next week in Montpellier, in southern France.
I'll be right there. I'm getting on the plane.
Exactly. Right? And we want them to be fun. So once everybody is done with the cleanup, we reward the workers with a glass or several glasses of Soleil wines. The drinking age, naturally.
Of course, which varies from country to country. And now I know at the Brooklyn cleanup, the Rockaway one, you had this rooftop apéro. And yes. I know that that is a huge part of the culture. I myself am drawn to a little bit of a snack, a little bit of a wine. Yes. I mean, listen, it can happen at any time, afternoon, but maybe late morning on the weekend.
We prefer Sunday nights because they're smooth and, you know, it's still the weekend and in the early evening. And that's what we did at the fabulous Rockaway Hotel in the Rockaways that you may be familiar with. Mm-hmm. We have a beautiful rooftop overlooking the ocean. So everyone gathered after the cleanup there for a glass of Soleil and some bites, some light bites. And we really danced all night all evening because a friend of mine came with his band. They happen to be his family. It's Charles Harper from the New York Brass Band. And they performed on this rooftop at sunset. We were drinking Soleil. It was ideal. A fantastic memory.
I mean, listen, this wine, summer, music all go together. Paint me a little picture of the soundtrack when you're sipping and snacking. What do you have on the stereo?
I promise, but you should come to the next one. We're going to do it again next year in the Rockaways.
I'll be right there. I'll hop on a plane. Well, listen, everything looks so bright. The future for Soleil looks fantastic. What are you hoping to see with the wine? How are you hoping to grow? What's your ultimate goal? I know it's a friend project, but when a friend project starts in a place like this and has such natural success, it's hard not to think about the future.
Yes, of course. And we have, you know, like plenty of ideas. We're like still brainstorming. You know, our importer asked us if we would consider doing an orange wine for the deadline. Why not? We're in the midst of like, you know, thinking of what's next for the brand. And we also want to continue to partner with the nonprofits that we've been partnering with, because this is really important to us. We want to be in several countries that reflect the soleil, ambience. And we are in the Balearic Islands, for example, in Spain. We're in Mauritius, but we're in other places where they also have a coastline and that are perfect for soleil. Not huge quantities everywhere, but the Netherlands, Belgium.
Where do I want to go on vacation? Do they have a beach? I can clean it up. I can write that off. It all works together, right?
That's a way to put it.
Yeah. Congratulations on everything. If people want to get the wine or to follow along or to see the designs, where can they go? How can they get involved with the brand?
So we are very well distributed in the U.S. You can go to our website. A lot of stores are listed and restaurants. If you're in New York, for example, you can go to Convive Wines, but there are like many other stores. If you can also order the wines from wine.com, depending on the states where you are. Or you can, sip on a glass of Soleil Vin de Bonté, Le Rosé or Le Rouge at Benoît, Alain Ducasse's bistro in New York, for example. And you can always reach out to us if you are in a specific location and you're looking for the wines. We'll be happy to answer your message on Instagram.
Yeah, and I can tell you right now, they shipped to California because it wound up at my house.
So. Fantastic.
thank you so much. It's so good to see you. Thanks for coming back on the show. And looking forward to enjoying more of the wine soon with some friends.
It was such a pleasure. I hope we'll have an occasion to celebrate with a glass of Soleil together.
A lot of beach out here in Los Angeles. So you just let me know. We'll come clean up here. We have another song from the archives and then a live performance from Sunny and the Sunsets here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you. My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Sonny, welcome to Snacky Tunes, coming all the way from Greece. I think you're the first conversation we had with anyone from the motherland of antiquities.
Yes, I'm happy to be that first person, the pioneer.
Just real quick, what's your meze life right now? You late lunches, you know, a little black coffee for breakfast. What are we talking about?
Close. My wife and I have made it our agenda to just try as many beaches as possible on different islands. We're just in search of the most magical water that the planet has to offer. So our itinerary is sort of, I'm even keeping like a Greece water chart for future reference of what the beaches are like, what the water is like, what the currents are and the salt and all the things. It's getting weird, but it's fantastic.
I mean, I have fond memories of being on Skiathos and eating Grecian uni out of like a little shack, and I wish I'd kept any sort of log because you. You couldn't pay me to make a map and how to get back to that one location.
Yes. Yeah, it's just the water is so amazing. I think it's like the water in that movie, in the pool in that movie Cocoon.
You feeling younger and younger every day?
So I don't think I look younger, but I'm taking like bigger and bigger dives off the diving board. Yeah.
Now I knew you. You grew up around water because you grew up in the gorgeous beach seaside community in Bolinas, California. Isn't that right?
Somewhat. I officially grew up in Fairfax. My parents, I was born in Bolinas, but my parents were actually just kind of what you could do back then. You could just kind of live on a houseboat 1 year and then live in the city 1 year and then live in Bolinas 1 year. So they were kind of itinerant within the Bay Area. But close. I definitely was like a West Coast, you know, North NorCal child.
I mean, it's such a beautiful area and so idyllic. And I know the new album, Self-Awareness Through Macrame, is inspired a lot by California, and you know, it just came out a few weeks ago and definitely captures a bit of like this endless summer California vibe. Why did you want to put that into an album? Why did you want to make that sort of the central theme for what you were focusing on for your latest release?
Well, I don't know that I consciously wanted to do that. You know, I get this question kind of a lot, like, why did you decide to write such and such? And my process is not like that. I'm kind of in the dark most of the time when I'm making songs and such. And that's where I should be, you know. I'm just kind of, I don't know why I'm writing things in my notebook that I'm writing or playing the chords on my guitar that I'm playing. I'm just kind of going with whatever's coming out. And there might be a point sometimes about, you know, halfway through a record where it starts to reveal itself for what it is. And then I might apply a little more conscious movement towards that direction. So if I happen to be writing, you know, more countrified type of songs, which I do, because I'm on a country kick and I'm listening to country music, or for whatever reasons, it's coming out that way. It not until I'm like five or six songs in that I'm like, okay, I'm making this kind of, this music is what's happening. And then I apply maybe a little more conscious effort to making more of it, to sort of fill out a record and have the record have some sort of consistency, you know, from beginning to end. So it's kind of the long answer to your question. But
no, I mean, it's interesting. Go ahead. No, I was going to say to have the themes reveal themselves in the first part of the creative process and then to go with those themes that have been established in the second part. Do you find a difference in like the first and the second batch of songs, or do they wind up getting shuffled together in the final track listing or arrangement?
Yeah, shuffled together. And it all sort of tends to seem like it. Well, it seems by the end like it was a conscious effort, you know, just like a just like a novel or a movie or something. You know, if you ask a novelist, like, why did you set out to write this book about, you know, he might, it, you know, maybe there are some novelists that had it all figured out from the beginning. John Steinbeck was going to be like, I wanted to follow the, you know, migrant workers from Oklahoma. So I, you know, but I think I don't mean that that doesn't exist, but I think for a lot of art, it's, it has to be a process of sort of discovery at first and not knowing what you want to make and sort of, you're sort of, if anything, you're kind of pulling away, the conscious artifice and looking for more what's really real. And as you sort of uncover that, then the art is revealed. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. No. It's just, I like to believe that there's stuff out in the ether that's changing all the time. And when you sit down for your creative process in that moment, some of that, what's out there, is what you latch onto and you pull it in and use it as inspiration, even if you weren't aware of it when you were starting.
Yes, I like this. It's kind of like, I've called it, you're kind of like an archaeologist of the subconscious, you know, you're sort of digging around for what's real, you know? There's a lot of crap in your mind you have to kind of get past to get, to get to the real, you know?
Well, the worst thing is when you realize that crap in your mind is also crap in other people's mind, and you're like, oh, I got to get through a whole bunch of stuff that's being fed to me before I can get to my own good stuff.
Yes, that's very – that is very accurate sometimes. Yeah.
All right, let's hear a song. First song you're going to play for us is Waiting. What's the story behind it?
This I was kind of observing my teenage son during the pandemic. You know, there was a lot of downtime in his room. Mm-hmm. Teenagers are already sort of absconding off to their rooms anyway. And then the pandemic heightened it. And I just was kind of observing that perhaps him and his friends were processing the pandemic kind of like a, like it was a timeout, and they were kind of waiting for, action to start up again. You know, maybe teenagers weren't alone in that, but that happened to be what was happening in my household. So I think I started, kind of just writing poetry about that. And he also was into fashion and making and, you know, sewing things. Him and his friends, you know, had like sewing machines and they're making stuff during the pandemic. And that's why there's kind of lines like, you know, have my needle and I have my thread. I'm making my exit clothes in bed. So it's kind of like he was in his room. He's, you know, sitting in bed a lot doing Zoom classes through high school and sewing, and it was kind of a time of waiting, I guess.
Yeah. Well, here we go. Sunny in the Sunsets, waiting live here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're here with Sunny of Sunny in the Sunsets. And right before the break, you mentioned the pandemic and how that inspired Waiting. Obviously a lot of music that's coming out now, it's either inspired directly during the pandemic or the time after. And while that's a year or two ago, you know, or even 3 years at this point, some of those themes and feelings still feel so relevant today. Why do you think there is like this hangover of emotion from that era?
I don't know. I mean, I would maybe speculate that it's not so much a hangover. It's just that we're still processing things, and we're so used to immediacy in this world that when something takes longer, we're like, geez, why is it taking so long? But, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years isn't that long to process such a worldwide global, you know, shutdown event. So it might be creeping into songs and art for decades to come, you know, I don't know. It certainly has still had a lot of impact on me, because coming out of it, I don't know. I don't know about you guys, but there was almost like a surge in expectation of just getting right back into regular life and being productive.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yes.
And, yep. All of a sudden it went from like, you know, a drought to like, just this sort of geyser and of to-do list stuff and obligations and some of them were, you know, maybe things we're waiting to do, but other things were like, whoa, my plate was overfilled the last couple of years, way more than pre-pandemic. So there was some sort of domino effect, or I don't know if that's the right metaphor, but you know, sort of, you know, sometimes when there's traffic and you can't see why, and it's like the ghost of an accident that was already cleared up, like, you know, 2 hours mm-hmm. prior, but there's still this weird vibe. Sort of, vibe, and this weird slowdown where the accident was, you know, feels like that in society right now. It's like we're still backed up or something.
Yeah, you know, I think when I was listening to this album and reading about your music, you tap into this undercurrent that seems to exist in California, because you hear like folk music in California or, you know, country in California, like, oh, it's going to be like happy and things like that. But I've lived here now for so many years that there is this like darker current or story that runs throughout the state that you seem to be able to tap into at times. For people who live here, you tap into it. And I think it's like, you do a good job of capturing for people who may have never spent a good amount of time in California. And just wanted to know like why you're drawn to that side of this area.
Well, saying dark things through sort of feel good music is like my favorite kind of art, you know. It's my favorite kind of music, you know. I mean, and many people did it to great effect for me, you know, from Helter Skelter to half of, you know, reggae or whatever, you know, almost everything that Bob Marley ever sang, you know. It's like, it sounds like, something you want to dance to and makes you feel good, but the message is, can be quite dark or cutting. That's my favorite kind of art. So that's why that. But I would also say, having spent some time on the East Coast, and California has a way of sort of being a positive on the surface. You know, everybody's kind of nice on the surface and kind of jagged just below the surface and a little treacherous. Mm-hmm. The East Coast has a beautiful way of being really honest on the surface. You know, people tell each other to screw off and stuff, but there's like maybe slightly under the surface, it's actually sometimes more brotherly in my
observation. I totally agree. Oh yeah.
So
100%.
So as a product of California, total product of California, maybe there's something to that in the way I make music that can be kind of, you know, fun and saccharine in some ways, melodically, but like carrying kind of a darker tale or message. It could be something that could be Californian. I don't know.
I feel it. Let's hear another song. Apropos, I think the next one is called Shadow. What's the story behind this track?
Yeah, well, that's a perfect example, because it's kind of talking. I mean, the first line is sort of a warning that there's a darkness coming, you know, which I do believe in a way. I believe there's some kind of global trial is coming, or perhaps it's on us. I don't know. It doesn't mean it's all bad. It just means that it's going to be an interesting time that's going to demand a lot of change from people. So Shadow kind of starts with that, and then it sort of morphs into Shadow being a positive thing, almost being kind of like your best friend. The shadow follows you. It's always there for you. It's always there till you die, you know. It's kind of one things in this journey in life that is with you from the beginning to the very end, just like your breath or something. So it kind of it kind of starts as an ominous warning and sort of morphs into embracing it as a positive.
I love it. All right, well, here we go. Sunny and the Sunsets playing Shadow live here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with Sunny, and we opened up the show with the song Pink Cake, and it's rare that we have a literal song about food. And I'd love to hear, you know, after all these years of doing the show, you think you'd have more, but I'd love to hear the story behind it. And, you know, it's such a great visual, and the title itself brings a vision to mind, but what was the inspo behind it, and what made you want to turn that moment into a song?
Well, this song, interestingly enough, is just a collage of overheard sentences that I heard. I overheard somebody talking about how their mom got them a pink cake, but they weren't. When they got home, the cake was there, but their mom had to go out, and then they had to leave, so they had to eat the cake like in the cab. And so I was just thought that was kind of funny, because it was like this, this, you know, perfect, beautiful gift and thoughtful thing that just got, you know, turned into chaos, and was kind of cheapened by, you know, not being able to eat the cake with the person you love or whatever, eating in the cab. And then I overheard, I've written a couple songs of things that I've overheard, but I overheard somebody say, it was just, they were like, I know I'm a burden, I know I'm a burden, but I'm so uncertain. I have so many questions, you know, and I was like, that is a great, I love that line. So I wrote it down and turned it into the chorus. It's kind of, it's not an literal autobiographical song, but it did capture kind of a feeling that I've had at times when I've been feeling kind of sad, sackish, and not at my best, and just feeling confused in romance or just in life, and feeling like a weight or whatever, and so the lines that I overheard, I just felt kind of drawn to them. And that was one of those songs that the lines I almost just writing them down verbatim, and then they practically in chronological order, and then they fit right into the chords that I was messing around with. And I thought, well, I'm not going to question this song. It's come together too seamlessly. So,
but also tapping into that theme, going back to the pandemic stuff, but this idea of wanting to have an experience with someone. And then
just getting obliterated.
Just wanting having to do it on your own is just talking about pulling out a theme out of a overheard sentence that fits into like what you've been working on, and it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, yeah, and I think those kinds of magical things happen, which is crazy.
Yeah,
when you're like I said, when you kind of don't know what you're making. It's kind of the time when the most magic happens, I think. And because that's kind of when you're the most receptive to, you know, whatever you want to call it, ancient, you know, spiritual messages in the ether or whatever. When you don't know what you're making, your sort of antennas are opened up to receive. And I tend to receive really magical things at that time. Once I kind of know too much about what I'm making, it's almost like the fishing nets are starting to close, you know? Because all of a sudden you're looking for something very specific. And then that's quite hard. That's like looking for this puzzle piece rather than being receptive to just everything. So, both situations happen, but that's why it's like the longer you can stay in that uncomfortable place where you don't actually know what you're making or what its purpose is, the more magic, you know, the more lightning you're going to kind of capture.
I mean, yeah, you never know what you're going to capture and how it's going to inspire you and what it's going to turn into. And, you know, as you look towards the immediate future, I know you're island hopping in Greece, but with plans to return to the state in California, do you look forward to a bit of a homecoming and coming back to, you know, at least where you spent some of your youth and finding out what's happening back in this place where you grew up?
No.
You're like, no thanks, America.
I mean, I don't see myself. Well, I don't see myself in any way particularly. But I'm not saying that I want to be a expatriate or whatever people are called that leave America. But I don't feel any. I wouldn't mind living in Greece. I've been looking at ways to do it for somebody who doesn't have, you know, much money to throw around. I don't feel a real need to stay in America or stay. Besides that, my mom and dad are there, and my kids going to college, so I don't have to shuttle home quick to raise my son. He's off at school now, but like, yeah, Can I live here? I would love to. If you guys want to help me.
I mean, listen, just look, tourism is big there. I think you can start busking. Maybe maybe you could run a music boat charter island hopping company. I don't know. I'm just brainstorming. But
there's a lot of like sort of houses that were that are kind of they're not ruins, like official ruins that you would visit.
Oh,
but
yes.
They're clearly
Italy
like,
did that too. Like,
they're just kind of half built stone houses yeah. that look abandoned. I could easily just squat in one of those for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Just, listen,
I mean, it worked for Leonard Cohen. He, you know, like.
Yeah, he did it. I mean, listen, you wouldn't be the first American artist to escape America and then turn that. I mean, imagine what you'd be able to capture in that sort of, if you tap into that like vein of history and tradition of just being an expat creative in Greece.
Yes.
Or anywhere
in Europe.
Let's do
it.
Well, listen, I want to make sure we have enough time for one song, but if people want to get the new album, if they want to see when you're going to hit the road or get any merch or check out any of your other albums or reissues, you have so much great work. Where can they go? How can they follow along?
I find Bandcamp to be the most artist favorable
yep.
of all the places you can kind of go these days. So Rocks in Your Head, Bandcamp is the place I usually send people. Besides that, you know, the internet gets everybody there, you know.
Yeah, I
people
agree.
Sort of figure out where to go.
Where to find. Yeah, you just sort of like go to the internet and however you internet yourself, that works for you. last song we have, I believe, is called The Application, which you might be doing for Greek citizenship sooner than we think. But what is the story behind this song and the meaning of it?
Well, this one was a couple records ago, but it's not on the new one, but it was just a comic book tale, filling out the application to become a human being. And the lady that is handing out the application just, you know, puts it on a stack with all the others and then go out onto the street and, you think your phone is your pack of cigarettes and your pack of cigarettes is your phone and you're just a big mess, you know, you're just not quite handling things because life is hard. And it's hard sometimes to feel 100% present and human and all that stuff. So it's really a song about that. Mm. And, not too much more really. I think at some point in the song, the character kind of stops. He just wants to fill out the application to not be a human being or not be somebody's in a relationship, just to be completely free of all of those expectations. So the song kind of comes full circle by the end.
I love it.
I would like to fill out an application to not be anything. It's a great application to fill out.
Just the boat captains checking out the different waters of the world. Sonny, thank you so much. Big shout out to George for helping set
this
up.
Thank you, Gio.
And here we go. Sonny and the Sunsets live on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
Be a human being.
Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.